All right. 7:13.
You want me to start?
Yeah.
Okay. Hold on a second. I gotta adjust everything a little bit. Here we go. 7:13. Nathaniel Wingate Peasley. People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos is brought to you by BunnySlippers.com and FoundItemClothing.com. Hey, Australia, New Zealand, or anywhere that is Chile right now, keep your feet warm and cute this winter with some Cthulhu slippers from BunnySlippers.com and get your favorite screen-accurate shirts from your favorite films found from FoundItemClothing.com. Want me to do that again? Okay. Written and edited by Daniel Spitzer. Audio by Sarah Fee and Daniel Spitzer. Music by Kevin MacLeod. PGTTCM is a part of the Dark Myths Collective. Learn more at thedarkmyths.org. Check out a cool podcast like...
Yep, didn't have anything.
Welcome to the People's Guide.
Welcome to the People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos.
We are engaged in an ongoing discussion of the Cthulhu mythos and its timeline regarding Earth. To be a part of it, contact us at pgttcm@gmail.com or join us on Facebook or Twitter. Just search for PGTTCM. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe to PGTTCM on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Click our Patreon button on pgttcm.podbean.com for early release episodes, unique audio content, otherwise unreleased banter, or contact us about our sticker cult, or donate a few dollars to paypal.me/pgttcm. Greetings, listeners. It is we, D.B. Spitzer and Sarah Fee, here to talk to you once again about the Cthulhu mythos, its books, its monsters, its unfortunate human casualties, its timeline in general, and even its tangential bits, like the dreamlands or things of a weird nature or things that are Lovecraftian leaning. From the creation of our galaxy to the death of our sun, this is an exploration of the Cthulhu mythos from the perspective of humanity's concept of history.
Learn of terrible meetings in lonely places, of cyclopean ruins in which vast staircases lead down to abysses of nighted secrets, of complex angles that lead through invisible walls to other regions of space and time, and of hideous explorations to remote and forbidden places on other worlds and different space-time continua.
Check out the show's merch table at pgttcm.threadless.com. You can find lots of cool shirts and mugs and stuff there. All original designs by D.B. Spitzer. Or check out the store link on pgttcm.com. Remember to check out the books we review on amazon.com. And why not use our Amazon link and look for The Strange Behaviors Anthology by Nihilism Revisited. And look for The Micro Story by D.B. Spitzer.
The People's Guide to the Cthulhu Mythos starts now. Okay. This is the final episode of series 7.
Yay! Woohoo!
Yeah, and we're not going to talk about why it's out of sequence,
it's
but
okay.
Why we have to record this one now instead of in the future.
Yeah, because of my ignorance.
No, it's, you know.
Because of my ignorance.
You'll find out later. No.
The future will reveal it all.
Yeah,
oh,
so...
Man. No, I've got Series 8 right here in notes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what it's about, though.
Okay, that's good. Because, you know, it's not really a surprise, because it's about the Cthulhu mythos.
It is, but what part of the Cthulhu mythos it's about, I'm not going to say. I'm not going to say that it starts with A.
Yeah, no. Anyway, but... Yeah, Series 8, we will be starting from the beginning again. We will be starting with... Mm-hmm. The beginning of the universe as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be going through the Cthulhu mythos timeline, going to dig a little bit deeper this time as we have more source material. And yeah.
Well, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah.
It also sounds interesting because, of course, like the Big Bang Theory didn't exist when the first writers of this mythos were exploring it. So
no.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Think about that in regards to, you know, scientific discoveries since when?
Mm-hmm.
Or at least theories.
So this episode, we're going to be talking about Nathaniel
Wingate Peasley.
Wingate Peasley.
Yeah, Nathaniel Wingate Peasley, that victim of history.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Going to be talking a little bit about the Yithians.
Mm-hmm.
Those mind-swapping sons of bitches from...
Oh my gosh, can we talk about non-consensual work?
What's that?
Can we talk about non-consensual for a minute?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, definitely. I'll talk about it right now.
Well, just, I mean, obviously, they're just a bunch of mind fuckers.
Yeah.
So they're actually a bunch of mind rapists.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's super messed up to be like, yeah, mm-hmm. we're going to force our whole culture's mind, those of us that can move at least, into mm-hmm. another culture's mind and cast them into our bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, well, and then Lovecraft's, like, explanation that it happened to this particular guy because he had some sort of erudition or, like, sort of, quote, advanced, unquote, intellect. And then, like, descriptions of it happening to other people, but they weren't, quote, smart enough, I guess, or whatever, to be able, advanced enough, as I think is how he put it, to contain the mind. And so then they have to go back in history. You're like, then it was like, it only was a couple of days or something. And it was like, how did he put it? An out of character advance or feverish activity. I don't know. It was weird.
Something like that.
Yeah. Anyway. Yuck.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, theoretically,
yeah,
I think it would be really interesting to do that, like, travel throughout time and history. And of course, I really like the description of, like, the mind swapping they did within the race.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they had a lot of, like, laws and stuff to govern that.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting idea, because of course laws are created because something happened and now we need to say don't do it again.
Yep.
So somewhere
out there, there's a whole book. I mean, I'm not joking. There is a whole book. I can't recall if I have it on my shelf or not, but a whole book of stories about Yithians.
Interesting.
Yeah.
There's probably more than one.
I do have it. I have to go through it. It's part of the Chaosium Cthulhu Mythos Cycle series, where they have, like, collections about, this isn't an ad, by the way, where they have collections of various authors or based off of various themes or monsters. Like, they have whole series on stuff in Antarctica, a whole thing about the Yithians, a whole thing about Henry Kuttner deities, and, you know, just various parts of the Cthulhu mythos. I believe most of them are edited by Robert M. Price, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't reached the end of the timeline here at the end of season 7.
No.
Because there's not the ending of our universe yet.
No, but...
the explosion of our sun.
We go about as far out as we can with this particular story.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
And also, the Yithians...
But this one, it spans the ages.
Yeah, and the Yithians... bring us back to the start of known time.
We could probably talk about the Yithians in every episode.
What's that?
We could probably talk about the Yithians in every episode.
We could.
I mean, it would be like, and then the Yithians are here.
Yeah, well, that's one part of the whole mythos timeline, is the Yithians take part throughout it.
Yeah.
Like, whether we're talking about Robert E. Howard, they're, you know, in Nakotis, the capital city or the big city that Peasley was in, he was hanging out with a guy named Krom Yah, who was a Chimerian from Conan's time.
Yeah, yeah.
A Chimerian chieftain. Chimerian? I think it's Chimerian.
I don't know.
Chieftain.
Chimerian makes it sound like he's a chimera or a chimera.
Yeah. Anyway. But yeah, no. Yithians, the whole timeline, and, you know, we're going to be starting back at the beginning with the Yucubian invasion of the known universe. And the Yithians doing their best to stop it from this part of the world.
So who are these Yucubian bastards?
We'll be talking about those worm assholes next
later?
Time.
Okay, yeah. All right. Sounds hot.
Yeah, it's not.
No, sounds horrible.
It's poorly written weird fiction.
That's too bad. But we're talking about it because the ideas are interesting?
We're talking about it because the ideas are interesting and who's involved with it. It's a round robin story by a bunch of people who are notable for what they've written. but it's a jarring hodgepodge of writing styles.
The period of my dreams apparently was one somewhat less than 150 million years ago, when the Paleozoic Age was giving place to the Mesozoic. The bodies occupied by the Great Race represented no surviving or even scientifically known line of terrestrial evolution, but were of particular closely homogeneous and highly specialized organic type, inclining as much to the vegetable as the animal state. Cell action was of a unique sort, almost precluding fatigue and wholly eliminating the need of sleep. Nourishment assimilated through the red trumpet-like appendage on one of the great flexible limbs was always semi-fluid and in many aspects wholly unlike the food of existing animals. The beings had but two of the senses which we recognize, sight and hearing. The latter, accompanied through the flower-like appendages of the bodies, gray stalks above their heads, but the other incomprehensible senses, not, however, well utilized by alien captive minds inhabiting their bodies, they possessed many. Their three eyes were so situated to give them a range of vision wider than the normal. Their blood was sort of deep greenish ichor of great thickness. They had no sex, but reproduction through seeds or spores, which clustered on their bases and could be developed only underwater. Great shallow tanks were used for growth of their young, which were, however, reared only in small numbers on account of the longevity of individuals, 4,000 or 5,000 years being the common lifespan.
Nathaniel Wingate Peasley, an American living in the first decade of the 20th century, who is possessed by a Yithian. He fears he's losing his mind when he unaccountably sees strange vistas of other worlds and of the Yithian library city. He also feels himself being led about by these creatures and experiences how they live. When he is returned to his own body, he finds that those around him have judged him insane due to the actions of the Yithian that possessed his body. While he was experiencing a Yithian existence in Earth's ancient past, the Yithian occupying his body was experiencing a human one in the present day. The narrator at first believes his episode and subsequent dreams to be the product of some kind of mental illness. His initial relief is at discovering other cases like his throughout history is withered when he discovers that the other cases are too similar to his own to be without a connection. The narrator's dreams become more vivid, and he becomes obsessed with archaeology and ancient manuscripts, as with the Yithian, but lacks any sort of proof that would demonstrate whether he is or was simply mad. He discovers that the Yithians on Earth died out eons ago, their civilization destroyed by a rival, utterly pre-human race described as half-Pelopius creatures. But the Yithian minds will inhabit new bodies on Earth after humanity is long gone. His tenuously held sanity is challenged when he discovers the proof he seeks, and that not only do remains of the Yithians' past civilizations still exist on Earth, but also still remaining are those who destroyed them. It is also mentioned that the current appearance of the Yithians is not the original, but one acquired during a previous mass projection of the minds of their race when disaster beckons, leaving the original inhabitants to die in the bodies of the Yithians.
Other ugly reports concerned my intimacy with leaders of occult groups and scholars suspected of connection with nameless bands of aberrant elderworld hierophants. Their rumors, though never proven at the time, were doubtless stimulated by the known tenor of some of my readings. For the consultant of the rare books and libraries cannot be efficiently secreted. There is tangible proof in form of marginal notes that I went minutely through such things as the Comte d'Aaron's Cult de Ghouls, Ludwig Prinz de Dermis mysteries, the Unsprechen Kulten of von Juntz, and surviving fragments of the puzzling Book of Ivan, and the dreaded Necronomicon of the mad Arab Abdul al-Hazred. Then, too, it is undeniable that the fresh and evil wave of underground cult activity set in about the time of my odd mutation.
Nathaniel Wingate Peasley, the narrator of the story, is a professor of political economy at Miskatonic University, and from 1908 until 1913, a victim of the Great Race of Yeth. He was born in 1870. There are autobiographical aspects to this character. The years of Peasley's amnesia correspond to the time span of Lovecraft's adolescent nervous breakdown, which forced him to drop out of high school and withdraw from society. During this period, Lovecraft suffered from facial tics, which may be reflected in the Yethian-possessed Peasley's inability to control his facial muscles. The feeling Lovecraft described upon returning to Providence after living in New York City for 2 years, that he was awakened from the queer dream about being away from home, has been called the cornerstone upon which Lovecraft built his masterpiece, The Shadow Out of Time. But an H.P. Lovecraft encyclopedia, which calls Peasley perhaps the most thoroughly developed of H.P.L.'s characters, notes that there are parallels as well to Lovecraft's father, Winfield Scott Lovecraft, who also displayed erratic behavior during a 5-year period of madness. Nathaniel was accompanied by the following beings during his time as a Yethian: Titus Sempronius Blasius, a Roman who had been a quaestor in Sulla's time. Sulla first became consul in 88 BC and was dictator of Rome from 82 to 80 BC. A quaestor was a Roman financial official. Sulla reformed the office and raised their number from 10 to 20. Is that part of real time?
Yeah, that's okay. Part of actual. That was okay. Real.
Bartolomeo Corsi, a 12th century Florentine monk. Crom Ya, a Cimmerian chief who lived in 1500 BC. This is an homage to Lovecraft's friend Robert E. Howard, whose best-known creation, Conan the Barbarian, hailed from Cimmeria and worshipped Crom. In Fred L. Pelton's 1989 short story, The Sussex Manuscript, Crom Ya is said to be a worshipper of Sothagwa, thank you. Kefnes, an Egyptian of the 14th dynasty, who told me the hideous secret of Narolethotep. The 14th dynasty was about 1700 BC. Neville Kingston Brown, an Australian physicist who died in 2518 AD. Pierre Louis Montagne. Montagne,
there we go.
Pierre-Louis Montagne, an aged Frenchman of Louis VIII's time. Louis VIII was king of France from 1610 to 1643. Nugsoth, a magician of the Dark Conquerors of 1600 AD. Saga, a being from the star-legged vegetable carn...
Oh, 16,000 AD.
16,000, okay. Nugsoth, a magician of the Dark Conquerors of 16,000 AD. Saga, a being from the star-headed vegetable carnivores of Antarctica, whom we'll be talking about again soon. I hope so. Theodotes, thank you. Theodotes, a Greco-bred Bactrian official of 200 BC. Bactrian? Yeah.
Bactrian.
Theodotes, a Greco-Bactrian official of 200 BC. James Woodville, a Suffolk gentleman of Cromwell's day. Cromwell lived from 1599 to 1658 and was the English head of state from 1653 until his death. Yang Li, a philosopher from the cruel empire of Song Cha, which is to come in 15 5000 AD.
5000.
Which is to come in 5000 AD. Songcha is first mentioned by Lovecraft in the story Beyond the Wall of Sleep. Can I do that one all over again?
Yes.
Yang Li, a philosopher from the cruel empire of Song Cha, which is to come in 5000 AD. Song Cha is first mentioned by Lovecraft in the story Beyond the Wall of Sleep. Thank you for listening to Season 7 of PGTTCM. Season 8 will be here momentarily.
Hey, you. Do you like the Tales from the Crypt series? Do you like spooky things in general? Then check out the Good Evening Kitties podcast. That's Good Evening Kitties podcast. GOODEVENINGKIDDIES podcast. Each week, I'll review a new episode from the TV series The Tales from the Crypt. Find me on Podbay, Podbean, or iTunes. That's the Good Evening Kitties podcast. Check it out today.
Tim isn't a perfect man. He's not the perfect husband or father. He's a guy struggling to provide for his family. No matter how hard he tries, it's all falling apart. When it looks like things can't get any worse, the accident happens. Tim can't remember a thing, only the sound of twisting metal, of the nightmares, and of the coyote stalking him through the halls of still waters. The doctors are lying, hiding behind false and stolen faces. Tim and the other patients are prisoners. Or is it all in his head, if he could only just remember? Follow Tim on his downward spiral through the asylum, through hell and back, as he uncovers the truth of what happened to his family. Tim E. Less is a disturbed horror thriller of insanity, chemical seduction, and true nightmares come to life. Silent Hill meets the cell. Sometimes the real horror is remembering. Tim E. Less by Lucas Millions. Available on Amazon Kindle and Amazon Paperback.
All right, so hey, that's Nathaniel Wingate Peasley.
Yeah, Nathaniel Wingate Peasley.
So yeah, in the interim,
yeah,
well, between recordings, you started talking about stuff, and I'm like, save it for tape. Come on, let's go.
Yeah, we gotta save that gold, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what I was saying is that when I was listening to this story, Shadow of Time, it really struck me that I think Nathaniel Wingate Peasley is more of a metaphor for HBL's dad,
yeah,
rather than himself, because I think that there's a lot of like wishful thinking going on there, but also partly because in the story, the only person who sticks around for Nathaniel Wingate Peasley, mm-hmm, is his youngest son,
yeah,
who was extremely young when he went mad, right?
Sure.
He was like 5 or 6,
mm-hmm,
and which is almost like my sister claims she can't remember anything from before she was 7 years old.
Yeah,
that's really young for a kid to like still be with, you know, still know that person. So probably it was much more like, I know HPL didn't grow up with his parents, and, you know, when you don't know your parents, you can put a lot of, like,
from what I understand, he didn't grow up with a father, but he grew up with his mother for a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
But no father at all.
Well, it may have been really limited. I'd have to look that up.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, but the point is that when one doesn't have a parent around, one spends time thinking about that parent.
Yeah.
And I imagine that a lot of the ways that one might think about that parent is like giving excuses about why they aren't around.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that Nathaniel Wingate Peasley was taken over against his will by some entity that he had no control over, and then was doing all these random, like his body was doing all these random things while his mind was off doing something more interesting and more edifying, is probably like a really good ego salve in some ways.
Yeah.
It's an explanation of why the parent wasn't there. What year was Lovecraft born?
1890.
Wasn't this character born in 1870? So if HBL was born sometime in 1890, then they would be 20 years apart-ish, which is when most people used to have kids back then. Yeah. So his dad would have been 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovecraft writing this possibly in, I don't know, to deal with stuff with his father? It sounds exceedingly reasonable. Mm-hmm. I think it's pretty cool how other books of the Cthulhu mythos have been mentioned in this story. Some Robert E. Howard, some Clark Ashton Smith.
A lot of the Necronomicon.
See, yeah, no, this is connected to other stories. This is connected to the elder things that live in Antarctica for generation or for eons. And there's mention of a bunch of other stuff that Lovecraft wrote about.
No,
just because of the scope.
It's kind of like
time.
A call out song.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Did you know about this? Did you know about that?
Yeah.
Did you know about this other thing? Did you know about this guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, our good friend Albert N. Wilmerth is mentioned. Oh, no, wrong story. I was going to say Albert N. Wilmerth is mentioned being like, watch out for this stuff. And I'm like, that's at the Mountains of Madness.
Oh.
But we'll be talking about that pretty soon. We'll be talking about the Dire Lake Expedition. So,
cool.
Yeah.
One of the things I did want to mention is that there's really only one brief mention of Nathaniel Wingate Price, Peasley's wife. and basically she's just mentioned as like she took one look at him after he woke up with a Yithian inside him, and she apparently was so overcome with horror that she refused to ever meet with him again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That doesn't sound like a wife to me, but then again, maybe they were married under her duress or something, and she's like, finally, a way to get out of here. Woohoo! Freedom!
He may have been so menacing-looking or so bizarre-looking or just like... just
well,
like,
if he couldn't control his facial features,
yeah,
he was all like... or even like...
Well, no, I mean, like, what if he was like wild-eyed and like chomped his mouth like really fast? Or like flared his nostrils and blinked suddenly, or his facial muscles did things that we as humans don't have like muscle memory for.
You mean like wiggling his ears?
I mean like wiggling his forehead in ways that are unfathomable to
us.
Well,
our muscles only work in one way.
Yeah, you know. Okay, so what if? Like, there's ways that we don't even think of our muscles moving. Like, most people can't wiggle their ears or do this with their eyebrows or do this with their nose or do this with their ears. So I've got headphones on.
Yeah.
Or do this with their neck flaps or...
You don't have neck flaps, you liar. What? What would they do with their neck flaps, Daniel?
Fly away. Anyway.
If only.
With a Yithy in mind, they might be like, oh, look what I can do with my neck.
Yeah, or like, you know, suddenly I can do all the things with my tongue. I can curl it and I can fold it. Yeah. Probably there was like something else going on there that we don't know about.
Sure.
Maybe he wasn't a very loving husband.
Yeah.
Maybe he was too loving of a husband.
Yeah.
You know? And she was like, ugh, I need to catch my breath.
Or maybe...
Oh, he's gone mad. Woohoo!
Yeah, no. There's. I'm not even going to speculate why Mrs. Peasley was like, I'm out and I'm taking the kids.
And I'm never coming back.
Yeah.
Nathaniel Wingate Peasley.
Nathaniel Wingate Peasley. Wingate Peasley's the son.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what I wanted to talk about is the Portland Horror Film Festival at the time of recording was last weekend.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
It was amazing. We went different days, so we didn't see the same films.
No, and neither of us were there for Saturday.
That's right.
But I was there Wednesday and Thursday. I was there for the meet and greet, and I was there for the Thursday shenanigans. But unfortunately, just because of schedules and stuff like that, I wasn't there to catch all of the short films, but most of the short films.
Yeah, we missed the shorts block on the sixth shorts block, and I think you missed the second shorts block on Thursday.
And Wednesday. Yeah.
A Wednesday too? But
yes.
Okay. All right. Let's look at that. Let's look at the schedule.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, I got you these.
We summoned a demon and compulsion.
Compulsion is amazing.
Right. We summoned a demon was hilarious. And the theme song was called We S to D.
Yeah. I thought you might like those.
Yeah, thank you very much. Okay, I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, I got you into a film festival.
Right?
Yeah. You're borrowed my pass for a day.
Yeah, that was really nice.
Hey, no problem.
When I went in, the guy at the on Friday, the guy at the door was like, hey, did you get your Hand of Glory yesterday? And I was like a half a second from saying, no, I didn't.
Well, then they would have asked you what your name was.
Good point.
And then you would have had to have been like,
Yeah. So I just said, no. Because I wanted to be honest.
Yeah.
Because I knew you got your Hand of Glory.
Yes, I did.
And it was really good.
Yeah, a really cool necklace because I was one of the patrons of horror. Mm-hmm. And if you were sitting in the crowd, you'd see my name pop up between movies, short films, whatnot, or before viewings when it's like, you know, I don't know, upcoming attractions kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, excuse me. Sorry.
Oh, you're excused.
Mm.
But yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. I got to talk to Brian Callahan for a while there one night. I think Wednesday night it was,
mm-hmm.
while I was waiting for my ride to come pick me up.
Mm-hmm.
Brian Callahan talked to me about how it's four nights this year and almost as many hours of film as the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival mm-hmm. now. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's like a day more than the film festival, but also not as many screens
all day.
Not as many screens. Well, Sunday or Saturday goes all day.
No, it's only from like 1 to 4.
Well, that's okay. I'm talking about the H.P. Lovecraft Film Festival.
Oh, sorry. Of course, the H.P. Lovecraft.
Pretty much all day, and I believe none of these really have a chance to go all day. But
well, what
they do go. Late afternoon.
One of the things HPL does is that they run more than one screen, so they also double run shorts blocks.
Yes. Yes.
So you can see different shorts blocks at different times.
Yeah. No. Yeah. And unfortunately, they're not at that level yet with the horror film festival. So if you miss a shorts block, you missed it.
Yeah.
You can just hopefully they'll have best of DVDs or mm-hmm. whatnot in the future.
But the film festival is a lot more like 3 nights and 1 afternoon of movies.
Yes.
It's not, you know, like a whole weekend of the whole everything.
No.
And you still get to do a lot of like horror people watching. I saw Liv Rainey Smith several times.
Mm-hmm.
And
Leave Rainey Smith?
I'm so sorry. I of course mean leave. I mean Leave Rainey Smith. I saw Leave Rainey Smith several times.
Yes.
And of course they had... Oh, it's right here in my hand. They had Barbara Crampton
uh-huh.
come in and do an interview and question and answer about her film that was in it called Puppet Master, The Littlest Reich, which is, by the way, amazing.
Good, good. Yeah, no, that was, I believe that was like one of the big premieres.
Yes, yes. Actually, she talked about a lot about like the importance of promoting on the festival circuit now for mm-hmm. films. And because, of course, she was a horror film star back in the day as well. And so she knows what it was like back in, I guess, the 80s, 70s, and 80s. And now she knows what it's like now and how it's changed. You know what? I'm probably dating her too old. I bet it was the 80s and 90s. She was a horror film star.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And she was great. She had a whole amazing thing. She said she hadn't been to the horror film festival here in Portland before because usually she's invited to go to somewhere in Spain.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I would go to Spain instead too.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But luckily, the weather wasn't that bad. And
it was really nice. Yeah. And the films were amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So do you want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, no. I want to talk about some of the feature films I saw. I saw Big Legend, which is about an ex-soldier who returns to the wilds of the Pacific Northwest to uncover the truth about his fiancée's disappearance, which is Big Legend, world premiere, 90 minutes, directed by Justin Lee. And it's a pretty good film. It is shot, like, literally, not literally, but...
figuratively in my backyard in the Gifford Pinshaw National Forest.
Really?
And yeah, no, and it's like out by the ape caves and
we
stuff like
that. We
should
watch that and then go camping.
Of, Mount St. Helens and whatnot. Yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, and I believe some was also filmed out in Kelso, or maybe the director's from Kelso. I can't remember. Kelso, Washington. Kelso, Longview, Washington.
Did you stay there for the interview with the director present since it was the world premiere?
I can't remember.
Okay.
It was a busy, busy day.
It really, really yeah. was. There was a lot going on.
Yeah. And then I also checked out on Thursday was the Pacific Northwest premiere of The Ranger, directed by Jen Wexler, after a run-in with the cops. At a punk show, Chelsea and her pals flee to her old abandoned family cabin, where they fall under the watchful eye of an overzealous park ranger. Kids shouldn't be messing around out here.
Shouldn't be fornicating in the woods like this?
Yeah, well, yeah, pretty much it's kind of like, you know, the whole like... You know, generally, like in the beginning of a horror film, mm-hmm. there's like, you guys shouldn't be out here. You know, this is dangerous.
Don't go up
place.
That road. And there's all the spooky things that keep yeah. happening out there.
But, like, what if the person who gives you the warning is actually the person who is like,
you're
you know,
already
the
too deep in.
The authority figure is the one who's actually the one.
Oh, man. That reminds me of this John Goodman film I saw once. I do not remember the name, but, like, he. The guy gets. Ugh. It's like the judge is the nephew of the guy who's suing him, and he's just going to turn into human stew eventually.
Okay.
It's a pretty gross film. You can just cut this part. I'm sorry.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, but what if the authority figure...
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is the person who's gonna cut you up. A common experience, actually.
Yeah.
For many of our fine citizens in the United States.
Yep.
Yeah. Did you want to talk about anything else?
Yeah. No. There was some There was a lot of really good, really smart, really fun horror movie shorts. Generally, anywhere from like a minute to about 16, 20 minutes. I mean, and Brian told me that they have like so many, like hundreds of videos that they had to go through, mm-hmm. and this is mm-hmm. like the best of the best. This is like. Far more than the year prior. And also one thing that they do is there is a discount for the entrance fee for women in horror.
Wow.
Just to help celebrate women in horror and get more women involved in horror and kind of showcase. Because mm-hmm. that is, you know, I guess one group that doesn't necessarily get represented creatively in horror as much,
well,
or
I
hasn't
mean,
in the past.
In film in general, like
yes.
there are hardly any women directors. There's a lot more women writers these days, which really does change the game, but women directors are still very far and few between. There's more women producers, which is nice also.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, films that are made by women it's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. And I really like kind of the tone that they go for with this film festival.
Uh-huh.
It's not, you know, exclusionary of any group.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, it's really awesome. And like tonally, it's all over the place, but
mm-hmm.
it's like a beautiful mixtape that
mm-hmm.
Gwen and Brian have put together with this video, with this horror festival. I mean, it doesn't go from like jarring to peaceful to jarring to it kind of like, you know, it's like gets a little slow and then ramps up and then cools you down and
right.
then gets you ready for the
right.
finale.
They do a lot of pairing the shorts so that they don't go wham wham wham.
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
more
yeah.
like
yeah.
this one and then that one.
Yeah,
yeah. It's like this one's a creepy creepy one.
Yeah.
But this one is like all full of jump scares and stuff.
Yeah, no, and one thing I really like about it is
mm-hmm.
it is a well together
mm-hmm.
it's put together very well.
Yeah.
It's really organized.
Well,
it's...
and so many of the films are just amazing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, they do a really good job, but they also have really good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I'm going to highly recommend that people, like, if you weren't able to go, track down, like, what was playing there and see if you can't find these short films
mm-hmm.
online somewhere. Did you want to talk about some that you liked?
Sure. Yeah. Puppet Master was good. It was extremely gory, but it was good. I didn't see the last one in the second shorts block the second half of the second to last one because it was too scary. It's called Banshee,
yeah.
But a little girl disappears and gets eaten in it. I just couldn't sit through that.
Okay.
So
yeah, there was one called Dead Cool that loner Maurice struggles to entertain his new friends. Contains mm-hmm. graphic sex and violence.
Oh, yeah.
And
They
had a trigger warning. It's like, hey, if you're mm-hmm. not into watching people get drugged and drugged and raped.
Yeah.
I'm like,
no.
I need to go catch my ride and, maybe stand outside for a moment.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's just. But there was a couple I saw that were really, really good. The warehouse was nice.
Yeah.
It's French and it has a good build up to what's happening. It's kind of like, you know, it's going to be scary, but you don't know what's going to happen. And then it's not actually that scary, which is good
mm-hmm.
for me anyway.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, yeah. What Leaves Remains was kind of really impressive. Mm-hmm. It was filmed in a 72-hour film contest. And it's done in stop-motion animation. Yeah, and it was 7.5 minutes long. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's kind of they didn't like start with armatures and then film it. They started with nothing and then made the armatures and everything, and filmed it in 72 hours.
Huh.
Uh huh.
Very cool.
I think so too. Very cool. I was really impressed in that way. The bumper on the shorts blocks I saw was really good. It's called Hand Cut.
Uh-huh.
And it's made by a local special effects producer
cool.
and his son. And it stars them both. And it's subtle. And it also has a real commentary on parenting, which was really funny.
Nice.
To me.
Well, I want to talk about some that I saw.
Yes.
The bumper that I saw first night was called Smooth Moves. It was about a minute long. It was short, to the point, hilarious, and just everything on Wednesday and Thursday that I saw. I saw the shorts block for shorts block one, and let's see, shorts block three is the ones that I saw, which I wish I could have seen more, but unfortunately it wasn't in the cards for me. Yeah, but day two, the shorts block, oh goodness, Mickey's Night In was a funny little surprise, just kind of fun. I mean, you know, I don't want to ruin horror stories, but or surprises. But yeah, no, I really, really, really liked the Thursday shorts block more than I liked the Wednesday shorts block. There was one that there was a couple that I really, really well. Actually, you know what? Like shorts block three, in my opinion, of what I saw was the strongest. Childer, which is about a mother's fear of feral children in the woods, and there's one scene that really kind of pays homage to Wicker Man.
Yeah.
Which, if you can look at that little photo there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, to the old Wicker Man. No Nick Cage, no bees.
Mm-hmm.
And also, We Summoned a Demon, or We Asked a Demon. What Metal Girls Are Into.
Oh, yeah, that one sounded really interesting.
Yeah, I told you about that one. And Kryptina's Spooktime Variety Show.
Mm-hmm.
They're all mm-hmm. really, really good. I suggest you track down What Metal Girls Are Into, Kryptina's Spooktime Variety Show, We Summoned a Demon.
I also, in that vein, I also really like Looker.
Childer. And just really kind of, let's see, yeah, just really kind of look them up and mm-hmm. see if you mm-hmm. can track them down, see what you think. Yeah. And Childer is spelled C-H-I-L-D-E-R, or you can look it up at Portland Horror Film Festival.
Cool.
Yeah.
I really
Anyway, you were saying.
I really liked Looker.
Uh-huh.
And another one I really liked was Feast on the Young, which is sort of a reimagining of fairy tales,
uh-huh.
which is well done and super creepy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So next year, we're going to go for the whole thing the whole time.
Yes, we are.
All right.
Whole thing, whole time, the two of us together.
Yeah. Cool.
Fist bump.
Fist bump. All right. So we're going to end the show at this point. Woo-hoo. So, yeah, you get to listen to all the end credits. All right. We'll see you next season.
Ciao. Stay squiggly.
And keep it weird.
Woohoo! Remember, you can help support the show by going to paypal.me/PGTTCM or clicking the patron button on pgttcm.podbean.com. A special thanks to everyone who helped support the show this season. Also, a special shout out to Old Jack, Scarface, Long Tom, Spanish Joe, Peters, and Mate Ellis. PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Check them out at PGTTCM is part of the Dark Myths Collective. Check them out at darkmyths.org. Music by Kevin MacLeod, edited and produced by DB Spitzer. Additional audio by Sarah Fee.
And also an additional shout out to the Big Guggler.
Big Guggler.
The Big Guggler.
I was interested. I thought that...
Hold on one second. Oh. I got to stop.